Welcome back to another episode of Whiteboard Weekly. Jason Ackerman here, along with the founder, the artist, Carl Eagleman.
The artist formerly known as Carl Eagleman. Now I'm going to change my name to a symbol. It's going to be a whiteboard marker symbol.
I think that's the way you got to go. That, you know, you got to draw. I wonder if Prince drew his own symbol.
There's probably a story behind that, yeah. And I'm sure that if I were to change my name to a symbol, it would have to be some kind of whiteboard marker symbol that's found in movements or somehow, some way. But I'm going to stick with Carl for right now. I like Carl.
All right. Well, so far, tons of positive feedback on the show. We're getting downloads. We're getting feedback. So it's always enjoyable to launch something new, to do something you're passionate about and have it resonate with the community. And there's no better community than the CrossFit community. So thanks for having our back. Thanks for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And of course, I don't know what it is yet, which I think the listeners need to understand. I'm a fly by my pants.
Fly by the seat of your pants.
See, you know, there we go. That's see, that needs to be a drawing. Yeah. I'm a fly by the seat of my pants kind of guy. And I always tell Carl, don't tell me what we're going to talk about, because I like to riff, and it's like jazz. I like to talk. So we got a good one for you today, I assume, right, Carl?
Yes, sir. And before we get started, too, I just want to say this has like become one of my favorite parts of the week, just sitting down with you and talking shop. And I hope that people also enjoy that, too. Other like-minded coaches out there who just like to talk about the stuff that we like to talk about, coaching cues, helping people become better coaches, helping those people become better movers, and just spreading the good knowledge around and discussing stuff that we learn and are passionate about. So anyway,
Before you go, I want to actually offer you a congratulations. You know, in the last couple of weeks, you've hit 200,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, that, it just boggles my mind. I'm just beyond thankful. I'm so humbled. I just can't believe it. I'm very, very thankful to have a platform that I can share thoughts and ideas and value with other people. And I'm just, thank you to anyone who's listening, who's following. Thank you so much. It really means a lot to me. And as I may have said before, and Jason, I know that I had discussed, like, this is just the beginning. Like, we have got so much more planned. I'm so excited about the future of Whiteboard Daily. And this is just another milestone along the journey.
Yeah. I mean, let's not give too much information out yet, but if you're listening, just know, tune in daily to Whiteboard Daily, and you're going to see all of the cool, fun, exciting projects. We have one really big one that we're working on that I'm super excited about. And, you know, I think this is just the catalyst for many more things. First 200,000, I know recently on Eric Rosa's town hall, he said he wants the CrossFit training Instagram to be the first non-athlete to hit 1 million. I think we're going to surpass them.
There's no sense in not dreaming big, that's for sure. And when you got passion that's powering your product, your project, then the sky's the limit, really. So again, thank you to everyone. It really means so much to me. And thank you to everyone else who's helped me along the way. It really means a lot. But hey, let's get into it, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this cue that we're going to feature this week is going to be front rack clock face. You may have seen this one in the past. I think I've reposted maybe two or three times, at least once. I learned this one. I picked this one up from the 2012 gold medalist in the men's 105 kilo category in the 2012 Olympics, Alexei Torchitti. He has got a massive following on Instagram, and rightfully so, because he is a phenomenal athlete. And just as much of an athlete, he's also a phenomenal teacher. I've learned so much from this man, and for me to share something I've learned from him, it really means a lot. I think this is one of the first ones that I have featured a cue from him, and after this, he and we started to correspond on Instagram, and to be able to direct message somebody like him and just get his input. We've collaborated on a few other posts since then, but he's just, I speak very highly of him, especially with the way that he educates other people. So I'm really happy to dig into front rack Clock Face. So, Jason, off the top of your head, do you remember what that one is?
I don't. I'm actually trying to search for it right now. The listeners are lucky enough to have it linked in the show notes. What date am I looking for?
So it looks like the last time I posted this, and I really do want to post this one again, was February 21st. So you do have to dig into this one quite a bit. I just remember that last time I posted it, it was very well received, and I figured that we could have a good discussion today about it. So February 21st is the last time I posted it. Depending on when this comes out, we might post it on the same day that this comes out, just so people have a good reference.
I'm searching back still. I'm searching back. I don't want to. The issue is if you open one of these, you go back to the beginning.
Oh, for me, that doesn't work. But I like it kind of opens it up on like little window.
You know what might be easier, Carl? You want to send me the link?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's just do that.
But, you know, for those of you listening, I thought we were joking about, you know, fly by the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
This is it. Where are you sending it to me? Via text or Slack?
On text.
Perfect.
But that's the thing with you being a level four, CrossFit level four. You should have no problem with improvising.
That's why I do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see what we got going on here now. Let's see. Front rack. I mean, I had an idea of what we were talking about. Describing the elbow position. All right. So very cool. So let's, you know, as I like to do, before even diving into the actual cue, let's have a little bit of a background here. Would you consider yourself an Olympic lifter or a CrossFitter?
I'm a CrossFitter, but I'm passionate about Olympic weightlifting, and I love it even more because I don't look like a typical Olympic weightlifter. I am 6'7". I'm probably like 230, 235. I used to be, in my heyday, boy, I was a beast. In New Zealand, they say you're a weapon if you're like a phenomenal athlete. Like, I used to train all the time, every day, especially when I was general manager for CrossFit Mana. And since then, you know, life kind of takes over. I'm not what I used to be, but man, I just love Olympic weightlifting. It's not so much about the weight anymore. It's just about the movement. I always think about that. I just love the movements. And I love being able to coach the movements too, because there's so much going on and there's so many different cues that you can use within this sport. So, yeah.
At 6'7", the assumption would be you're a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever pick up the ball? Can you?
Yeah, I did. I had a full ride scholarship to Bellarmine University down in Louisville, Kentucky. And at the time it was a Division II school. 2020 now, this is their inaugural Division I season. They just made the move to D1. But when I was there, it was D2, and I loved it. I loved playing basketball. But, you know, after a while you kind of realize there's other sports out there. I grew up in Indiana, and when you're tall and you live in Indiana, that's what you do. You play basketball. And I didn't realize that, man, there's so much out there, you know, especially for taller athletes, like so many disciplines within track and field, rowing, you know, rowing is a great sport for taller athletes. But man, basketball was just fun. I still just love watching basketball and shooting around. And I always want to be able to dunk. That's kind of my goal.
Can you dunk?
Yes, I can. I should get back on the court just to make sure. But last time I checked, yes.
Listeners want to see a video of that, Carl.
I'm sure they probably do, and they deserve that by now.
They do. 200,000. Come on, they deserve it. You must have grown up around the Reggie Miller time.
Oh yeah, Reggie Miller, Miller time. That was a big. Let's see, like late '90s. They had a few showdowns with the Bulls
And the Knicks too. I mean, they had the whole
big time.
Knicks, remember Spike Lee.
Yeah, the Knicks, and then also in 2004, I want to say 2004, was it? That's when, like, Ron Artest, he got in the big, there's like a big melee. I guess that was Detroit with the Detroit Pistons. And anyway, yeah, Pacers. But, man, as of now, I just love watching, like, the athletes in the NBA are just phenomenal. Just strong powerhouses that can just jump and, it's so fun to watch. I love it.
So at 6'7", what CrossFit movement do you have the most advantage over?
Rowing, no question.
Well, give me some time references. What's your best 2K?
My best 2K. Well, also though, I took 2 years off of CrossFit, and I only focused on indoor rowing because I found out that if you're tall and you have a good set of lungs and if you can move well, you could be a good rower. And I wanted to see if I could break a sub six 2K. And so for 2 years, all I did was just in my garage by myself. I followed a program book called 75 Erg Workouts for Athletes. And it's an awesome little book that is spiral bound. It fits right on your foot stretchers. I'm not sure if it's still in production, but I just used that 2 years focused on rowing. And the fastest I got was a 6.11. Right? I did a 6.11 2K. And
did you do Crash Bees?
I did Crash Bees 1 year. What year was that? You can look up my time. I think I came in like fourth or fifth in my division, which at the time I think was 30 to 35. And I'm 41 right now. So yeah, it's gosh, I need to look up. I wish I could. You know what? In the show notes, how about this? In the show notes, we'll look at the results and we'll list my results in there. I think I did like a. I want to say like maybe a 6:18. I could be completely wrong, but I think it was around that. I remember though, at the Indy sprints, the Indy indoor sprints, which is Indianapolis, at the Indy Rowing Center, I did a 6:11, and I really want to say that was in 2013 or 2014. So,
what's harder, a sub six row or a sub five run?
A sub five, like a mile. Undeniably a 2K row because rowing workouts are some of the most grueling workouts I've ever done in my entire life because you have real time data right in front of your face every single stroke. And so if you take it easy on one stroke, it never lies. You've heard of like Henry Rollins says 200 pounds is always 200 pounds. The iron never lies to you. And that's very, very true, obviously, but the erg never lies to you either. If you slack off on one stroke, it's going to tell you exactly where you are. And so, man, oh my gosh, if you ever want an ugly picture of yourself, of your face, just have someone take a picture of yourself when you're on an erg rowing a 2K time trial.
Well, you know, and it's funny because, you know, you think of any workout and you can row, you can bike, or you can run, you're right. You can almost kind of recover as you go off on that run. But if you're not pulling or you're not biking, yeah, Nothing's ticking away. Like even if you're walking, you're making progress.
Sure.
But if you're not pulling on that erg, you're not. So that's where you have the most advantage. Where would you say you have the biggest disadvantage?
It would have to be some kind of gymnastics movements. I'd probably say handstand pushups. I'd say handstand pushups just because leverage and weight, that sort of thing. Thankfully, as a taller athlete, and what I realized is that when I was able to use the length of my body with a kip, I was able to generate a lot of power. So, you know, kipping pull-ups, kipping handstand push-ups, that hip power, violent hip extension, it really helped me out. But doing strict handstand push-ups or even strict gymnastics movements in general, I wasn't as good doing that as I would strict. So I would say, the strict gymnastics movements are harder for a taller athlete.
It's funny because I would say the exact opposite as you. Like, really? What we were being short and stubby, handstand push-ups. I've done 50 unbroken, kipping.
Wow.
But in rowing, I'm terrible. The best, my best is exactly 1 minute slower than your best at 7:11, and I had to train. I didn't train quite as intensely and devotional as you did to the rower, but I had a race set up against one of my clients, a 2K race. And, you know, I took one of my rowers from the box home and I would row at night in the basement. And with that, I got down to a 7:11, and I never want to feel that pain ever again.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's the worst.
I don't want to ever feel that. People ask me, you know, what's your least favorite workout? It's a 2K. I would say it's a 2K row followed by a 1 mile run followed by friends. I think that's that
sounds horrible.
And that's probably pretty standard across the board. What's your wife want, Carl? What's the wife want?
She wants me to get the bike down. They're about to go on a bicycle ride. Hey, hang tight real quick, okay? This will take 10 seconds.
All right, I'll filibuster. Okay. Tell your daughter to go get Patience. By the way, Patience is their dog. They're training it for – I'm here alone right now. Carl has abandoned me on just the second or third episode of Whiteboard Weekly. But again, we do want to give you guys much love for subscribing. And I do want to hear from you guys. What is your favorite and least favorite workout? And what's harder, a 2K row or a 1 mile run? So hit us up in the comments or DM Carl about that over at Whiteboard Daily. Let's dive back into this. So how do we say his name? Because his Instagram handle seems to be his last name. I would say it as Tarakti.
Yeah, I did my research before the episode just to make sure that I wasn't mispronouncing it. I hope I'm not, but even the footage from the NBC Olympics, it's Tarakti.
Tarakti.
Tarakti. Yep, Alexei Tarakti.
So
he's one. That's one name I do not want to get wrong because I do not want to disrespect this guy in any way, shape, or form. Not just because of respect, but also because he is a massively strong individual.
Yes, I would imagine the gold medalist at 105 kilos, you know, coming in at like 215 pounds is pretty strong. Let me ask you a few questions about this drawing. One, how do you get your circles so perfect? You must be using something.
Yes, I'm absolutely using usually what I do is I use a like a jar lid, like the inside of a jar, you know, like I'll trace, I use that. And then also anytime you see a straight line, I always use a ruler. So,
So these aren't all freehand.
No, I mean, like that's the only thing I ever use is either a ruler for straight lines or I'll trace the inside of a jar lid for circles because it's like, I would be making life so much more difficult for me if I wasn't doing that. It would take forever to get drawings finished.
How important is it for you on a drawing like this to have the individuals, the stick figures, the same height?
It's very, very important because it's like you want to communicate. You want to communicate the picture properly, and you want to say like, you know, this applies to any individual, and for this individual, hopefully they're all the same size. These are all the different racks that you want to have. They are the different positions for the elbows, and that just comes with practice. And usually what I'll do is that everything, you know, I always start from the foot up whenever I'm drawing. I always start from, and I've started to draw my feet a little bit different than what you see here. This are just like flat feet. I've started to draw like a little arch. And so you can see where the heel and the toes are on the feet. So you can tell this is a kind of older drawing for me. I might redraw this one actually.
Yeah. I'd love to see it when we put this out there. Now, what about the hips? What made you go with more of a triangle versus a circle or oval here?
Yeah, that's influenced by Brian McKenzie. I used to follow him. He was, as you recall, I'm sure, CrossFit Endurance before Hinshaw came around. Brian McKenzie was the one when, if it came to any kind of distance or endurance, rowing, running, any kind of monostructural, he was the man for that. And I remember watching some seminar videos of him drawing the human body, and one specifically was the human body is a wheel, and I've drawn up that cube before, and he was drawing his version of the human body, and he drew the hips as a triangle, like an inverted triangle. It really made sense to me because the pelvis is a three-dimensional bone, and what I mean by that is like it's not just like flat, like there's some structure to it. You can tip it forward or backward. It can have an anterior tilt or posterior tilt or neutral. And so I want to be able to communicate that. And it especially comes important whenever I'm drawing gymnastics movements and cues, because there you must have that the tilt of the pelvis is a very important part of your hollow body or your tight arch position.
Yeah, no, I think that's great that you're drawing it that way. And, you know, the attention to detail that you put to these, I think, can't go unnoticed. So let's as always, read the caption. Front rack clock face adapted from, how do we say his name again? Tarakti. Carl's frozen for a second. How do we say his name?
Sorry. I had it redone. Tarakti.
Tarakti. Yep. So the front rack clock face adapted from Tarakti when describing elbow positioning in front rack. What does this mean? Referencing the hours on a clock face to the position of the elbows may provide you with a more precise description for the athlete. For example, in the press, your elbows are at a 5 o'clock position. In the jerk, your elbows are at a 4 o'clock position. And in the front squat, your elbows are at a 3 o'clock position. I love it. And I think, you know, this is something we get asked a lot at seminars and we talk about it, you know, should your elbow position change? And full disclosure, at the level one, whether it's the press, the push press, or the push jerk, we do tend to encourage people to keep them more in this 5 o'clock position. As you were developing in Olympic lifting, what did you do?
You start to learn about the importance of mobility. And I've done, there's another cue that I've written up before about how mobility leads to better positioning. Better positioning leads to efficiency of movement, and efficiency of movement leads to a stronger position or strength. And so you realize the importance of mobility in really whatever movement that you're doing. I mean, it doesn't just apply to Olympic weightlifting, but gymnastics as well, and even monostructure movements as well. Especially though, when we're talking about something like this, you realize the importance of that front rack position, because if you do not have a proper front rack position when you're moving through the clean, the front squat, and then into the jerk, you're going to make life much more difficult for you. You have to have that bar connected to your torso, and you have to have your elbow positions in a way that's going to be efficient from you to either get out of the squat or go into the jerk. And both are going to have a unique position for the arms. So, going back to the level one certifications that you're talking about, this really applies to the concept of being of achieving virtuosity, of being a virtuous coach, where you're going kind of above and beyond just having the bar in the front rack position. You know, you want to make things, you really want to pay attention to details, what I'm saying. And that attention to detail is going to make you more efficient. So I hope that this helps people understand just a little bit better why that's important.
Yeah. And, you know, to be clear, when we're at a level one, it's really an entry level course, you know, and people ask us, you know, what about the hit on the snatch, or, you know, whether it's elbow position in any of these overhead lifts. But you have to realize, like, if you're competing in the Olympics, you're very specialized. And you're good enough and your mobility is good enough that you can change these positions. For a lot of people, you know, telling them to put their elbows in a 4 o'clock position on the jerk just isn't going to happen. You know, so yeah. It's really a matter of understanding, hey, most people, most of the time, we can all be in this 5 o'clock position. As you get better, we're going to change that elbow position as we change the movement. And obviously, the most important, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, would be that front squat. If you can't get your elbows up to that 3 o'clock position on the front squat, we're definitely going to struggle.
Yep, absolutely. And a lot of people who might even be listening to this are going to be like, man, I try, it's so hard for me to do that, but I just cannot get my elbows in that position. And many people are like, they may direct message me and it'll be about that specific subject, and they'll think it's like a wrist issue or it's an elbow issue. And more often than not, it's a lot of time. It's in the lats, your trunk of your torso. And then that's going to affect how high you can get those elbows. This is also how I kind of think of it. When you're standing there in your anatomical position, standing nice and tall and straight, your spine is at its strongest position with it. You get your little lumbar curve, all the vertebrae are stacked on top of each other, just like they should. That is the strongest position for your spine to be in. Okay. Now, if the requirement though is to either catch the bar or receive the bar, or if to send your hips below the top of your knees and be in a front squat. Well, we want to keep that position as long as we possibly can through that movement. Okay. So we want to keep the torso upright because that's a strong position for your vertebrae. Now, the thing is that you've got your another variable with this, and that's your arms and your elbows, and that position of your arms and your elbows are going to help you establish that vertical position with your spine through that movement. So it's really imperative that you keep those elbows nice and high, and especially when you're in the bottom of your front squat, to drive those elbows up, up, up. And I know that we talk about this in level ones, and the coaching cues are all over the place. Whenever you're talking about front squat, driving elbows up, and it's so imperative because that really helps you from bowing weight, just kind of crush. So elbows at 3 o'clock, we talk about elbows are lasers shooting forward. I love that one as well. People seem to be to receive that one really well. Elbows high as possible and drive out of that squat. Keep that vertebrae nice and torso.
Yeah, and one thing you said there that I think can't go unnoticed is you're absolutely right. For so many people, when it comes to the front squat and the front rack position, they just assume it's tight wrists or, you know, forearms, when in reality, for most people, it's tight lats. And the way that I often test that, I would tell people, okay, you know, if you're listening, think about this, go grab a barbell, get a full grip on the bar. Like, don't worry that you're going to front squat. Give me a full grip and get your elbows up as high as you can. And you're going to find that sticking point where you're probably going to be in that 5 or 4 o'clock position. And then I'd say, like, really, if you had to keep going, where do you feel that stretch? And they're going to almost always feel it in the lats, especially now. And this is my way of showing them, but also helping them stretch. What I would do is, I can't do it to you, Carl. I'd have to get on a box because you're, you know, a foot and a half taller than me. But I would come in front of that person. So imagine now you have the bar in your rack position, your full grip, stand in front of you. I will push down on the barbell or PVC if we're using PVC. And I would almost scoop my elbow, your elbows with my elbow pits and help you drive up. And you're going to just get a fantastic stretch. So, and like you said earlier, it's like mobility, position, efficiency, strength. So many people like, hey, throw 225 and let's squat. You know, all you're doing is masking your issues by putting, you know, weight will mask your flaws.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and every weekend at a level one, inevitably someone's like, can we get a barbell? Can I put weight on the bar? You know, and it's like, you want to do that because these positions are really challenging for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had friends, you know, a mutual friend, Austin Maliolo, at one point spent, I want to say 6 months, like just really working the rack position with PVC. And after that, he was PRing his clean, his power clean as well, and his front squat, because he just really put the work in to get in better positions and to get more mobility there. So it's worth it. It's often not the sexy stuff that gets you better, but it's the stuff you know, and the cool thing is you can do this stuff, you can make improvements in your training, and you're also not beating your body down.
Yeah, right. And I'll tell you what I do too. And especially as I've gotten older, I'm 41 right now, and I don't move the weight. I don't move nearly the amount of weight that I used to. And I've become so fine with that because I've fallen in love more now with the movements, the core to extremity, the efficiency of movement. And so now for me, whenever I go, I do my training, it's about like, how can I make this as smooth as possible? How can I get in the best position possible? And because I know in the long run, like that's going to help me if I want to lift heavy weight in the future. Yeah. You got to be in that better position, but if you kind of start to fall in love with the process rather than just like the weight on the bar, you're gonna have a much better time, and chances are you're going to be less injured, and you're going to have a much more success in the long run. So yeah, it's all about perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, you find CrossFit and you want to become bigger, stronger, faster, et cetera.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's shortcuts to get there, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, vitamin S and steroids. I'm talking about, you know, you can you could just lift too heavy too often and bang your body up. But the people that I have seen, and even, you know, at 42 years old, doing the same thing as you, like saying, okay, you got to slow down in order to go faster.
Yeah.
And I love seeing people at the box that aren't super competitive, but just come in consistently for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then all of a sudden, they're absolute monsters.
Yeah, right.
And that's because they just did it right. They weren't the people that took class and then spent another 2 hours training. They did what the coach said. They you know, pushed the intensity, and they saw the results.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any other tips or tools that you use in order to help people with the front rack? So in other words, you know, I use that method, and then I would also combine it with PNF stretching, proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. So, yep. You know, you're in that same position I was describing. And Let me see if I can get a video. Maybe I'll get a video of that.
I'm very familiar with PNF stretching. It's just kind of a fun phrase, proprioceptor neuromuscular facilitation. We used to do that a lot in college. Yeah. And again, I'm dating myself here, but this is back in like the late, this is like 97 to 2001. That's when I was in school. And
same.
And at the time it was like, that was like this new concept, right? Of passive and active stretching. And you basically need to have a partner usually when you're doing this, where you're kind of resisting them and then they push you into a better position, and then you resist them and then they push you into a better position. Now, whether or not that works after the research that's been done since the past 20 years or so, I'm not sure if that's still, if it's still even effective. But I do know that for sure got me into a better position. Whether I was strong in that position, I'm not sure. Other cues for front rack position, aside from elbows or lasers, let me think here. I'd have to look some stuff up.
Those are cues, you know, yeah. And yeah, I mean, you know, as we've spoken about in the past, you know, we want to make them positive cues, you know, whether it's lasers or point your elbows up or drive your elbows up. I would say what I would want to avoid as a coach is being the coach that only says elbows up.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'll tell you another thing that's very important, I think, for you to communicate that feeling of the barbell connected to the torso, is having your athlete try to do, I guess they're called zombie squats, right? Where you have the barbell in that front rack position, but your elbows are not bent. They are, your arms are extended out in front of you. They are raised up a little bit, probably so your hands are above your head, and you really feel that barbell connected to your torso in the front rack. And you don't have to worry so much about the flex through the elbow on that. And so that's going to allow them to understand, oh, listen, okay, I understand now, this barbell must be connected to my body and not resting in my hands. And to realize that you don't have to fight that position, and how much less energy you're using when you're not trying to hold that bar in that front rack position.
Yeah. I'd say one of the biggest mistakes people make is that death grip.
Yes.
And trying to keep such a strong grip on the bar. Personally, if I'm going for a heavy front squat, you know, anything significant, I find I feel stronger with the stronger grip, but it's also heavier, so it's a little easier to get it to sit on my shoulders.
Yeah.
But I would tell a lot of people, if you struggle with that rack, loosen your grip, whether it's 3, 2, or even just one finger on the bar. Obviously, as we transition, if you're doing a clean and jerk, we need to regrip, but that's where you'll bounce it out of the bottom. But don't be afraid to keep just your piece fingers on the bar and let it roll back into that last knuckle.
One more thing before we move on too. I took some time off from CrossFit, and I only focused on Olympic weightlifting for a while as well. And I used to train at the time, Will Fleming, he had a gym in Bloomington, Indiana called Force Fitness. And this is where I learned this, where you just take wrist wraps and you loop them onto the bar. And so instead of having even just your fingertips on the bar, you're just holding onto the wrist wraps. So you're still able to bend at the elbow, keep the bar in the front rack position, and pass through a full range of movement with the front squat. So that also is another option too.
Yeah, what we want to avoid is immediately scaling, or I wouldn't even say scaling, I would say modifying your athlete to an I Dream of Genie squat.
Yeah, right.
And that, yep. You know, that's what I grew up with, front squatting. You know, when I front squatted at the Globo gym back in the day, it was arms crossed.
Yeah, and bodybuilder style. Yeah.
Yeah, the bodybuilder style. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if it allows you to lift weight, go for it. But remember, the reason we don't want you only doing that is because the transferability ends there. Mm-hmm. You know, ultimately, what's this front squat? It's your thruster. Mm-hmm. You know, it's your squat clean. I mean, if you can't front squat, how are you going to catch a bar below parallel? Yeah. How are you going to take it into your jerk? So, you know, it's not avoid the genie squat, but I would say don't rely on it. And if you have someone doing that, use these tips that Carl and I are laying out there to get them better. And that's you as a coach. Okay. Hey, Carl, class is over. We let you squat with your arms crossed. Now I need you to do X to get better for next time. And what that would be for me and something I've done over the years is it's like a 3-minute drill. So you find a weight that is heavy enough that it sits on your shoulders that you can be in the front rack, but not too heavy that it's easy or crushing your body. This shouldn't be a core drill. It should be, you know, a flexibility mobility drill. You know, so I'd say for most men, it's probably 95 to 115. Women, you know, 55 to 75 pounds. And give me a full grip on the bar, start a clock, and try to accumulate 3 minutes of really getting those elbows up. That doesn't mean it has to be unbroken. Maybe it's Tabata style. Maybe it's 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. But work on that position. And when you can hold that position for 3 minutes, drop it down. Drop it down. Eventually, the goal being that you're at PVC.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what you're doing there too is you're kind of accumulating time under tension. I'm a big fan of Tabata. I love Tabata because with that built-in rest, I'm a big fan of EMOMs. Oh my gosh. I probably rely on EMOMs too much in my personal training just because.
You know what Pat Sherwood said, right?
I'm sure he's got something to say about him. What?
He said something along the lines of EMOMs are your way of saying you don't want to work hard.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. That makes a lot of sense actually. But yes, but also too, it's like if you just want to train and make sure you're getting some good time, to devote to good form, there's a time and a place for EMOMs. I completely understand where he's coming from on that though too, because that built-in rest is so sweet.
But you know what? I agree with you. Like during the pandemic, I was doing a lot of 20, 30, even 40 minute EMOMs where it's like, it's forcing me to move. Whenever I coach an EMOM, I tell people a good EMOM, you start and you're like, I can do this forever.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle, you're like, okay, this shit is getting real. Yeah. And then towards the end, you're like, when is this over? Like, when is the last round? So, you don't want to be completely gassed out in the first round and you want to be able to make it. So, but most people, you know, when you see them doing EMOMs, they're just like, I really don't want to just fight against the clock. So let me do 15 burpees. Let me do a 200 meter row, whatever that EMOM looks like.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though. Here's the deal, right? At least you're out there moving and you're doing something, and that's important, like to do something that you love. And I've noticed that with my own training where it's very important to be, for me at least, to have like a diverse skill set when it comes to movement. I never want to be just like very focused on single joint movements. I love the functionality of movement. And thankfully, I enjoy diversity and I enjoy doing different things. I also really enjoy just doing Olympic weightlifting and those movements as well. And so it's like, as long as I'm doing something that I love to do and it gets me excited, then I see no problem in that. Should I do more, Metcon style stuff? And should I do more like, you know, where my heart rate is increased and I'm breathing heavy? Yeah, I probably should, but man, I'm just having fun right now. And I'm learning while I'm doing it too. So,
I agree. And, you know, I always say like back in the day in 2007, I was so stubborn and ignorant. It was like, what? You're going to do yoga? You're dumb. And meanwhile, I was a yoga teacher, or you're going to do, bicep curls. Like one of the first shirts I made at my box Albany CrossFit was friends don't let friends do bicep curls,
Yeah.
Now, and one thing I remind classes when I coach, and I believe I stole this quote from Chuck Bennington from the gymnastics course.
Yeah, I love Chuck.
Great dude. Go check him out. It's just exercise.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. He's, as far as perspective goes, man, he is one of the best. Like, I have learned so much from him. He, to me, coined the term do less better in this sense that, like, people are so caught up in doing the big sexy movements of the muscle up, and whether it's, you know, ring muscle ups or kipping handstand pushups or handstand walks, but they are so quick to skip the stair steps that takes them to that spot. And you really, if you really want to be good at those things, then you would understand the importance of taking a few steps back and focusing on the fundamentals and building a wide base of your pyramid before you go up to the next skill level. That's so important. And I just admire him for bringing it to my attention.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that goes as far as taking rest days, listening to your body. I mean, you're 41, I'm 42. I'd like to think we're pretty fit for our age, but over the last 4 or 5 years, my fitness is still climbing, but it's from doing exactly what you're saying. It's from resting more. I'm coming off of 2 rest days right now, which I, you know, my body was just smashed. And it's also just, you know, not always going RX, like being smarter about it. Like, hey, I want to be in better positions. You know, I think what you said earlier, it really needs to travel through this episode of mobility, position, efficiency, strength. You can't, there's no shortcuts. I mean, there are shortcuts, but they're just that. You're going to be injured or you're going to plateau rather than learning to do things right. Yeah. So, you know, looking at this picture, we spent a lot of time on the front rack. Is there anything else you would add as far as talking about that 5 o'clock position for the press or 4 o'clock for the jerk?
Let me think here. I mean, I think the, like a lot of people, especially in CrossFit, we do thrusters so often, and you talked about this earlier. The main thing, you know, the thruster obviously is a front squat that goes into a push press. And there's a lot of deviation between the 3 o'clock position and the 5 o'clock position. And what I want to communicate to you or to coaches is to understand that it's okay to have some dynamic movement with your elbow position as you're moving between those two positions. And I think all that we want to make sure really is that the elbows are clear of the knees when you're down in that front squat position. And that once you reach that push press position at the top of the thruster, that the elbows are in a good position to go up and over with the barbell. So, and again, and I put this in the picture itself with the little asterisk that these are suggestions, you know, these are just suggestions of like, hey, listen, this might work for you and your athlete. It's not the golden rule, but it might help. That's all.
Yeah. And I think that's great. You know, really all any cue is a suggestion, but this is probably the most true just because everyone's body is different when it comes to the mobility of, you know, you're talking multi-joints, wrist, elbow, shoulders, lats, you know, in this rack position. One thing I remind people in, especially the presses, you know, so you're looking at that 5 o'clock position, the barbell wants to go the direction of your forearm.
Yep.
Right. So, you know, that's why for the beginners, especially, we want to keep that position static because if you drive your elbows up and you tell them to go overhead in the jerk and they're new, they're going to smash their teeth in.
Yep.
You know, so, and I'm sure if you watch the Olympians, you'll see that their elbows are up, but probably right about the point that they start to throw that bar overhead, they drop a little bit as you know, and they also clear their face out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man, I got a great one. So Chad Vaughn, 2-time Olympian, he's got one. I need to redraw. I love this one, but he talks about the face being a Pez dispenser during the push press, where basically you're getting your face and nose out of the way. And I do this rather than like there's stinky diaper where you're like smushing, you're making a double chin with your face and you're getting the head out of the way, out of the bar path. But I tend to kind of like look up like a Pez dispenser, look up to get my chin out of the way, and then punch that bar in the overhead position. So again, whatever works for you, but man, again, there's still so many cues out there that I just love painting the visual.
That if you haven't done a Pez dispenser, you need to do that. Maybe with, you know, the most iconic being Snoopy. For those of you that were born after 2001, Google Pez dispenser, because I'm sure you don't know what that is.
They might not even know. Yeah,
that's crazy. They're still out there. But I also tell people, imagine I ripped a smelly fart in front of your face. What are you going to do? And they're going to retract their face. Or I forget who did it. I want to say it was Gary V. Not the Gary V that everybody would think of. Gary Villegas from CrossFit Eternity. I think it was him at a level one. He literally put his hand in front of someone's face and goes, "Fat face." And we were just cracking up. And his point was like, you know, imagine you're taking a selfie and you make the most disgusting face you can, like triple chin. Yeah, that's what you want to be thinking about. Women get that one a little bit faster, you know, in the sense of the selfie. But he goes, "Fat face." So I wouldn't necessarily say fat face to your members, but it might help them understand what you're looking for, especially in the press and the push press.
Yeah. So Stephen Haydock, we were talking about him last time.
Haycock.
Yeah. And he had one that was really good. It was fat face and it was light switch nose. So you make a fat face and then the bar, you imagine that you have a light switch on the tip of your nose, and as the bar passes up, it switches the light switch on. I mean, again, we might be getting too elaborate here, but hey, whatever works, works. So fat face and light switch nose.
Can we get a drawing of that just says fat face?
I can do that. Yeah. I need to redraw this one. I need to redraw that one anyway. Cause it's been at least a couple of years.
Yeah. And I had text Steve after our initial podcast and I was like, "Hey, by the way, we may or may not have called you Haycock on our first episode, but Steve is a, talking about people you don't want to mess with. Steve is, you know, I've been competing in jiu-jitsu for nearly 15 years and he has put the most hurting on me than anyone I've ever rolled with. And he gently crushes your spirit, I would call it. I think that's great. I think, you know, hopefully with this, people start to understand. I love the idea of like maybe when you're in front of your class and you're next time you're going over one of these movements, maybe give a little demonstration of, hey, here's 5 o'clock, here's 4 o'clock, here's 3 o'clock, because now all of a sudden when you're coaching, you can use that word, "Hey, 3 o'clock," and your members remember what you're referring to. But we've also layered in some other amazing cues along the way, especially those drills. I'd say most people can get into that press position. They struggle a little bit going to that 4 o'clock of the jerk, but the big struggle is that front rack. So really this may have been a lot of front rack talk, but it's probably because this is the most challenging of the movements.
Yeah. One last thing that you kind of touched on right there. I've done a post about this too. I really like this one. It's regarding the coach's view. Whenever you're demonstrating something, the coach's view, the most valuable coach's view that you have is when you are standing with your side to the audience, to the crowd, to the class. And the reason being is because so much of the movements that we do, and that's why I draw so many movement sequences to the side, is because that's where all the magic happens. That's where we can see the hips and the knees and the shoulders, everything move. And so that's why I really like front right clock face, is because if someone is standing directly to the side of you, they can start to see, understand, they can draw that mental picture of a clock face comes out of your shoulder. So I hope that helps people.
Yeah, that's important on two fronts, really. It's important as the coach to know when you're demonstrating where you should be standing. Because if I demonstrate these clock positions directly in front of you, like we're mirrored, you're not going to see it as well. And that's, you know, remember as a coach, there's one of you, there may be 20 in your class. Yeah. Don't tell the class to move around you, just pivot. Yes, you know, and let's throw in one deeper lesson there that we talk about at seminar staff is don't talk while demonstrating. You'd probably say like, "Hey guys, I'm going to demonstrate the press. My elbows are going to be in a 5 o'clock position. Watch me. Boom, boom. Then talk." But your athletes can really only concentrate on one thing at a time. It might be the moving or it might be the talking. So really important there. And then also as a coach, when you're watching a class, it's important that you understand the best angles to see those movements. And like Carl just said, it's probably, you know, perpendicular to your athlete.
Yeah. I mean, look at hook grip, all the videos, most of the videos that you see of Olympic weightlifting if they're not at a 90-degree angle, they're at a 45-degree angle. So you can see everything moving from the side. So really, I know it might sound trivial, but if we want to be the best coaches that we can, let's make it easy for our athletes to understand movement better. And that really relies on how you present the information to them. So make sure that you have your individuals in the coach's view so they can see the magic, and make sure you're not talking when you're demoing. That's a big factor. A lot of new coaches love to have so much knowledge and they're talking when they're doing stuff, but all the while their movement suffers because they're so focused on the talking part. So much stuff that we could still talk about, but yeah, I just love it.
Yeah. Talk less, have your athletes move more.
Yep.
All right, Carl. I think that was a great summary of Front Rack Clock Face. Again, for those wanting to check it out, if they haven't already, it was February 21st of this year, 2020. And much of what we discussed will be in the show notes. Carl and I are going to also make an effort to put some videos to go along with a lot of the drawings. So let's get this one up on the day of, and I'll have a nice video of a couple of the drills that we use to improve your rack position. One thing though that we didn't touch upon, you said you went to college in 97 to 2001. What's your favorite Chumbawamba song?
I get knocked down.
I only asked that because, man, that song was a hit, Tub Thumping, back in 97 when I was in college. And if that song came on, you'd find Little Ackerman on the dance floor dancing. So hopefully there's no video of that out there. But
Cotton Eye Joe.
I want to say it was like the Rednecks or something.
The Rednecks, yeah. You can find everything on, like, Now That's What I Call Music, Volume 7, probably.
Classic. Well, Carl, another great episode.
Yep.
If you're listening, please, as always, shoot Carl a DM at whiteboard_daily. If you want, you can shoot us an email at whiteboardweeklypodcast@gmail.com, and like, subscribe, do all the stuff you're supposed to do. No different than Whiteboard Daily. Started with a man and a marker. And I suppose this is starting with two men and a couple microphones. Two turntables and a microphone. But give us some feedback. That's what we want. You want to take us out, Carl?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say again, this is one of my favorite parts of the week, is just sitting down with you, Jason, and hopefully the people that are listening, they really enjoy this time of the week as well, when they can download a new episode and listen to us just talk shop. It really means a lot to me to have your support. Whiteboard Daily is truly a passion of mine, and I know it is as for Jason as well. And we just want to grow the platform that we have to share good quality coaching content with everyone out there. So thank you so much. It really means a lot to me. Again, thinking back on hitting 200,000 followers on Instagram, and to know also that this is just the beginning of something very special. So thank you so much for your support. It truly means so much to me, and be on the lookout for more things in the very near future. And again, please remember, a high tide raises all boats. So together, let's keep on rising those tides together. And together, we're going to make everything better. So thank you so much.